We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
I selected the 82nd Psalm for two reasons. One, it continues to be my ambition someday to have preached all 150 Psalms. I'm getting there, 82, over halfway. And second, because I think it speaks to the concerns of this season and this day and our present experience. We remember the 9/11 event, but we have plenty of pressing concerns for today. And the governments of the world often seem to be falling into chaos. And the events that surround us fill us with concerns for our futures. Where is it all headed to? I believe the 82nd Psalm speaks to these concerns. Before I launch into that, let me get there in verse 6. There's that little line that drives everybody crazy, where God, speaking to the situation, says, "I have said, you are gods." And to whom is he speaking that he says to them they are gods? And we wonder about that. So let me kind of back up now and work my way up to that verse. There's a little word family in Hebrew. The easiest, smallest, simplest member of the family is El. We would say E-L, El. It means mighty ones or strong ones. And it is very often applied to God. And we would say El Shaddai is one of the titles for God, or just El, the mighty one. But it is also sometimes applied to human beings who have strength in whatever circumstance or context that they are in, and sometimes it's just part of their name. You would be familiar with this showing up in names like Dan L. And if you think about it, you will quickly come up with some others. Try this one, Ezekiel L. You get it, and so it goes. A little longer extension of that word El is Elah, E-L-A-H. We would say Elah. And it means that you have taken this strong and mighty thing and you have turned it into an object of worship. And that also is used of God, as our worship should flow up to He who is Almighty. But that word is also used sometimes of the inappropriate exercise of worshiping the false pagan gods that you have set up as an object of worship, a piece of rock or a chunk of wood. And it's inappropriate because of the object that you have tried to make an object of worship. And sometimes the word is used of human beings. You might find it if you were reading in the Hebrew versions of the book of Daniel about certain ones who would set themselves up above all that is called God and make of themselves, if they can, an object of worship. The longer, more complicated form of the word and the actual word used in Psalm 82 is Elohim. And we run into it early in the first chapters of Genesis. And it is used throughout the Old Testament about 2,600 times to refer to God. And the root meaning of it is Lord, technically lords because it's always plural in form. That's why it has that im, I-N, I-M thing on the end of it. Lords, but that can just mean to magnify the idea of Lord, the really great Lord. And it's almost always used of God. And there are other words that are typically used to describe human lords, but a few times, very few, in the literature, the Old Testament and other literature of the day. Elohim is used to describe human beings who are given power, mastery, authority over a limited situation, a king, a governor. They are a lord. Now I want you to understand that that is meant differently than when you say it of God, because God is the Lord of lords. God is the Lord of heaven and earth. God is the Lord of all creation. God is the Lord of all. And we understand the difference. These human beings are not gods, as the familiar translation often renders this word, and it does in Psalm 82. They are human lords. And when we begin to take verse 6 that way, we understand what is being said in verse 1 and 2 as well. God takes his stand in his own congregation. He judges in the midst of the rulers. And this leads me to a consistent, even universal Bible truth. God raises up human rulers of the earth. Now, if you follow my online devotions, you will see that the next several deal with this very topic, and you might find a little more extended treatment of some things I'm going to rush over today. But it's in both covenants. If you read the 17th chapter of the book of Acts, you will see it plainly said that God establishes the bounds and habitations of all the nations of the earth and sets them to accomplish his will. If you read the 13th chapter of the book of Romans, you will see that it says that there is no earthly authority except that established by God, and that we should recognize earthly authorities as established by God. Sometimes we don't like that, but that is what the Bible says. It's in the Old Covenant as well. If you read the 9th chapter of the book of Exodus, and you find this again in the New Testament, in the 9th chapter of the book of Romans, it says that God raised up the Pharaoh that was there at the time of Moses. It says God raised that man up for his purposes so that he would be there to ensure that God's name gets proclaimed. Now, the Pharaoh didn't do that of his own free will, but he was there to make sure that it was done, and God put him there for those purposes. If you read the book of Isaiah, you will discover that 150 years before Cyrus the Persian is born, God says Cyrus is going to come on the scene. He says, I will take him by the right hand and I will lead him. I will level the road before him. I will move obstacles out of his way. I will give him hidden treasures and great authority so that he will be the one anointed to get my will done. God raises up the rulers of the earth. He raised them up among the pagan nations, Egypt, Babylon, Persia. He raised them up among his own people, or do we forget the stories of Gideon and Samson and Deborah? God raises up the rulers of the earth. Second truth made abundantly clear in lots of passages, but made real clear here in Psalm 82. God raises them up and he also judges them. The fact that he put them in a position of authority does not exempt them from his judgment on their conduct of that authority. He is speaking here to the leaders of Israel, and the idea is this. I said you were gods / lords. I'm the one who put you in your position of authority, but what gave you the idea that that meant that you can judge unjustly? Whatever made you think that me giving you authority made it all right for you to show the kind of partiality where you favor the rich man because he's rich and can do things for you over the poor man who can do nothing for you, regardless of the fact that the poor man is right and the rich man is wrong? Who told you you could govern this way? Where did you ever get the idea that I put you here so that you could, in corrupt fashion, gather illegitimate wealth unto yourself? How did you ever conceive that I put you here so that you could carry on your womanizing to the destruction of your own family and other families of people around you? Where'd you get that notion that it was okay for you to govern in such a fashion? Do you not understand that I put you here to rescue the weak and the needy? Has it not occurred to you that your job is to seek justice for the afflicted, to promote righteousness among the peoples, and to punish evildoers? So you're king. Well, God would say, I can show you a long list of dead kings, and you will die. You will die like every other man. You will die like the beggar at your gate. Maybe sooner than the beggar at your gate if you don't clean up your act. Because I'm putting you on notice right now. I, Lord of Lords, King of Kings, Judge of all the earth. And this is the plea of the psalm. Arise, O God, and judge the earth, for it is you who possesses all nations. We need to hear that part. It is you who possesses how many of the nations? All of the nations. God raises up the rulers of the earth, even the ones we would call the bad ones, Pharaoh, Nero. God put them in their places. And whether they would or not, they will advance His will. And for every sin, they will be judged. Sometimes, this judgment of the ruling authorities does not happen fast enough to suit us. And I get it. This is why the plea arises at the end of the psalm. Arise, O God, and judge the earth. Because these guys are wandering around in the dark without a clue until the foundations of the whole system are shaken. Judge the earth, O God, who possesses all nations. We'd like it to happen right now. I've never forgotten, as a young man, when I understood this phrase, the sin of the Canaanites was not yet ripe. And how the Israelites got so many warnings and so many chances until their sin was ripe. The sin of corrupt rulers must exist before it can be punished, and it must exist in entrenched fashion because God is patient and merciful and gives to all every opportunity. But when judgment falls, I just want you to consider a couple of things. Persia fell in a single generation. Egypt was decimated in one single agricultural season. Babylon fell in a day. One day. When judgment falls, it falls. And Israel too was judged for the abuses of their leaders, for the willingness of the people to be led by corrupt leaders into inappropriate directions and places. This is the message of Psalm 82. God stands in the midst of his own congregation, and he judges the rulers, those whom he has set in authority, but whom he will also hold to a standard. And he is the possessor of all nations. There is a truth that emerges from all this that I think we need to remember. And if you were with me last Wednesday morning, you will have already heard a little bit of this. But in any room, in any society, in any situation, the real power lies with the faithful servant of God. Despite any and all appearances to the contrary, in any situation, the real power lies with the faithful servant of God. I want you to think about this for a moment. I've mentioned Pharaoh and Moses. So Moses shows up before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh thinks that this is somebody who can just be kicked to the curb and ignored and never thought about again. And why shouldn't Pharaoh think that? Pharaoh has all the armies. Pharaoh has all the money. Pharaoh has all the authority. Pharaoh has the backing and resources of an entire nation. And Moses has a stick. And the power of God standing behind him. And despite all appearances to the contrary, the real power in that room stood with Moses. And Egypt would be decimated, and all of Pharaoh's choices and prerogatives removed. As began this discussion in our Wednesday breakfast Bible study, Paul stood before Herod, Bernice, and Festus, and they were free. And he was in chains. And they appeared to have control of his destiny. They can do whatever they want, and he must accept whatever they do. Certainly, all the power seems to be on this side of the room, and Paul stands here insignificant. Except that the power of God stood behind Paul. And he would turn the world upside down. And you would never have heard of the Roman governor Festus, or this particular Herod, or his wife Bernice. You would never have heard their name or known that they existed had they not momentarily crossed paths with Paul. Because the real power in that room stood with Paul. The example. Jesus stood before Pilate. And Pilate had the power of life and death in his hand to exercise over Jesus, and could not understand why Jesus did not seem to recognize this. Don't you know? Don't you know that I hold your life in my hands? And Jesus said, you hold no power except what God has given you for this moment. And then Pilate condemned Jesus to be killed. Jesus was killed. And all the power seems to have lain with Pilate after all, for 3 days. Because when God, who is the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and ruler of all, when God can raise the dead, no other power counts. Not for anything. The real power is always with the faithful servant of God. In any situation, despite any seeming evidence to the contrary, as I understand it, on the last day, the armies of the world will combine and unite in one grand effort to undercut the power of God, and they will be mowed like grass. Because we know where the real power lies. If we will name him the Lord of our lives, then we need not live in fear and uncertainty, but we can live with confidence and boldness, because despite any seeming appearances, his power is always behind us. And he is the judge of the whole earth and possesses all nations. Ours, and I don't claim to know everything that's going to happen here, but I know who owns this nation. Afghanistan, I don't claim to know what all is going to happen there, but I know who owns that nation. And if in the midst of these happenings I die, and Paul did, beheaded by the authority of Nero, if in the midst of these circumstances I die, and James did, done in by the authority of Herod, if in the midst of these circumstances I die, and Stephen did, stoned to death by the leaders among the Jews, if in the midst of these dismal circumstances I die, another victim of the power of the fallen and corrupt world, nevertheless, the King of Kings is the King of life, and I will yet live. And when God can raise the dead, never mind the way that he can control armies. Set aside for a moment the way that the natural forces of the earth are his to command. Never mind the way that he can stack circumstances over the centuries. If God can raise the dead, no other power counts. And God will raise me to eternal life, because the real power stands with the faithful servant of God. I hope that when we leave here today to confront in whatever way it falls to us the confusion and the darkness and the duress of our times, that we know whose power stands behind us, and we operate with certainties and confidence.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website, at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.